Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Mixed martial arts. Mixed martial arts. That's what MMA stands for.
God, all right. No more rapping. No more singing. It's time to talk some fights because the UFC is back in Las Vegas. They're outside of the Apex. It's International Fight Week. We had the Hall of Fame on Thursday. We had some negative stuff go on today, but we're not going to talk about that right now because we have two title fights to look forward to tomorrow night. And for the first time in over 6 years, despite what one of our panelists is going to say in a matter of moments, Nick Diaz stepped on the scale, successfully made weight for a UFC fight, and he's going to make the walk tomorrow. Unbelievable. We have a lot of interesting storylines to discuss ahead of Saturday's UFC September pay-per-view offering as we welcome you to the UFC 266 preview show here on MMAfighting.com. We got the whole crew here and some new faces for preview shows. We haven't had this face on very often, but I'm glad he's here. You've seen a lot of this man, but we'll introduce him in a moment. I am Mike Heck alongside Jose Youngs, our boots on the ground in Las Vegas, Nevada. How are you, sir?
Oh, you know, tired, sleepy, sweaty, exhausted, but ready for some fist fights. Red carpet was fun. I'm sure we'll talk about that.
Yes, I'm sure we will. We have Mr. Jed Meshew back. This is like 3 out of 4 shows, Jed. This is unbelievable. How are you?
I'm good. I have to get all my takes out now because Casey robbed me, so I don't get to talk next week, which is unfortunate.
Well, that's good. And, of course, we have the aforementioned Casey Lydon, the baddest stash in the game, and according to Jed, the worst judge in BTL history. How are you, sir?
The worst and only judge. This guy.
Well, we've had a lot of guest judges, and a lot of them favor Jed, but that is besides the point. Let's get right into this thing. Jose, I love to ask you this question because this is different, all right? It's Vegas. It's International Fight Week. We didn't have International Fight Week last year. Nick Diaz is scheduled to fight. I think you like that word, Jed, scheduled to fight. 2021 is just wild, man. What is Las Vegas like this week? Like, what has it been like out there with all this going on?
It's hard to say. It's hard to compare it to previous international fight weeks. I've been to, I think, every international fight week since about 2013 that have happened. And this one is hard to gauge just because before, a lot of the UFC events would be on the strip. Or, as I know Casey remembers, like I think it was 2015 when they had like 3 fight cards in like 3 days, or it was like 2 fight cards in 2 days or something like that. So it's hard to gauge the magnitude of it just because we have to go to the Apex lot, which is way off the strip. So I didn't really feel, and like at the press conference yesterday with like, especially with the DSI, I thought it would just be like insanity. It really wasn't. It was kind of a subdued crowd, regardless of what you heard through the cameras. There wasn't a lot of people there. Maybe it's because it was a Thursday. I don't know. But today, after official weigh-ins, I went down to the Park MGM and the Park Theater, which is right across the street from the T-Mobile, which is where the ceremonial weigh-ins were. And I actually got to see fans in line for autographs. And my God, there are an absurd amount of fight fans standing in 100-degree weather just to get autographs and photos with their favorite fighters. So until today, it didn't feel big, but after seeing the enormous amount of fans all like playing the UFC, like hit the hammer and the ball goes up and stare downs with like virtual fighters and like all these and like standing in line to meet Jorge Masvidal and Bobby Green and Claudio Gadelha, it does kind of have an international fight week feel. It's just the only thing missing is I think it's missing that fan expo. Like remember Casey, like 2000, mm-hmm. like before the Reebok deal, they would have that big convention with all the booths and everything. It doesn't have the feel like that because those were fantastic, but it's good to see at least the fans are back and they're able to meet their favorite fighters this week.
We're going to talk the top three fights in a moment and under the radar stuff, but Jed, we're covering this event from a little bit of a different perspective from Jose because we're not on the scene. We can look at things with a little bit more of a wider lens. We sort of touched on this on BTL. I think this is a really good card on paper. There's some really interesting fights. There's some high stakes fights, some interesting debuts. The main card is really intriguing. This is one of my most anticipated cards of the year from a purist perspective. Of course, we got some bells and whistles for the casuals, which we'll get into as well. But all in all, I really like this card from top to bottom. Your thoughts on the card as a whole, Jed?
Mike, you know me, man. I love to tell people to not tune in and just watch tune into our coverage on MMAfighting.com. And I feel justified every time I say it, but I can't say that about this because this is legitimately really good MMA. Like almost every fight this weekend has a purpose. It's a really well structured event. Like you said, there's something for everybody here. There's hardcore fans' dreams. There are casual stuff sprinkled in. There are contenders meeting kind of aging out veterans. It's runs the whole gamut. This is the UFC at its best. Like when they are booking a fight card, doing what they are supposed to do as promoters, kind of this is it. And I think it's the best card on paper all summer. Maybe we're not technically in the summer anymore. I don't really know when the equinox happened or happens, but it's the best card on paper in several months. And I am legitimately excited for tomorrow night.
How do you like the entirety of the card, Casey? Like the whole collection of fights in one album, so to speak. How do you like it as a whole?
Oh, I'm just going to say what Jed said. It's actually a great card. Fights that have meaning, lots of top 10 fighters, championship fights, you know, the return of Nick Diaz, you know, a rematch of a classic fight. And then you have lots of newcomers, lots of prospects. You have vets like Roxanne Modafari, and apparently she's going to break the record for most professional female fights, which hasn't been talked about once by the UFC, which is whatever, but that's cool. And the Dan Hooker Nasrat story just thrown in there too. I mean, it's an excellent card. The prelims rule, even the early prelims, a lot of prospects, and then the fights you have to pay for, all fights that matter, and all fights that deserve to be on a pay per view. So, thumbs up, UFC, you did it. Best fight of the fall.
Best card. All right, so let's break down this main event. We'll start with you, Jose, because this fight.
Hey, wait, can we? I need to send that clip to Dana because you know we get lots of crap in the media for crapping on MMA, but all four of us just said how awesome this fight card rules. So just take that in mind before later on when he calls us scumbags again.
It's still two fights too long. Don't need to be 13. Like I'm not going to buck too hard on it, but like.
Those are free fights. Those are free fights, early prelims. Those are like, you know, people waiting in line, you know, insecure. Like, there's going to be like six people in the arena for those first two fights. But I know what you're saying. we have to cover it. Yeah.
Yes. And three potential five round fights on top of that. But Jose, the main event, this is like a Jose Young's kind of a fight, right? You being a fan of high level martial arts competitions above most else, you got Alexander Volkanovsky, a guy who just does not get the credit he deserves, in my opinion, returns for the first time since he beat Max Holloway at UFC 251. Depends on who you ask. I thought Volkanovsky won that fight, but he's going to defend his title for the second time, this time against his rival, fellow Tough 29 coach, Brian Ortega. And not that this fight really needed it, Jose, but Volkanovsky is trying to up the ante with the trash talk, which is very unlike Volkanovsky. So a lot to unpack with what I just said, but what are your thoughts on the fight, the build, and Volkanovski just trying to throw shade every chance he gets for this fight.
Oh, I mean, I was hyped for this fight the second Brian Ortega beat the Korean Zombie. Like, because we all knew once Brian Ortega, he didn't technically win by knockout, but I'm going to say when he knocked out the Korean Zombie on Fight Island, we all knew that was the fight to make. And I immediately was just salivating at this matchup. I knew Alexander Volkanovski, like you said, I don't think gets enough appreciation as being a champion. I mean, he's a lot of people consider like Max and Jose Aldo and Chad Mendes, three of the five greatest featherweights ever. And Alexander Volkanovski has beaten all of them. And he's still always the underdog and is still considered the second. And some even put him the third best featherweight in the world behind like either Max Holloway or AJ McKee or somewhere in that gambit right there. I still put him at the top just because he is the UFC champion, but I'm not going to argue with anyone. And then Brian Ortega, outside of that Max Holloway fight, has looked absolutely unbelievable. He has a whole new team. Has a whole new management system. He just seems like a new man. And yeah, Alexander Volkanovski has sold the hell out of this fight. And it's weird to say, I know you're going to ask, like, what is the under the radar fight of the night? And it's weird when the main event is the one that no one is talking about, because obviously everyone is in town for the Diaz Robbie Lawler 5-round fight. Everyone keeps forgetting it's 5 rounds. But the main event checks every box. There's heat between both coaches or both fighters. They have a ton of footage of them interacting. They are both clearly two of the top three featherweights in the UFC right now. And I think Brian Ortega even said it's going to be him, Volkanovski, and Holloway. It's like a triangle. Those three are going to be at the top. And I'm very curious to see if whoever comes out the losing end, if they put on a good showing and it's like a fight of the night that a lot of people think. I don't think either man is going to lose much value in the rankings. So this checks every box of an incredibly high level martial arts competition that I don't even think needs a title on the line for it to absolutely rule. Volkanovski, underappreciated. He's trying to he's fighting with a chip on his shoulder. Brian Ortega thinks he's the man and wants to, as he said, he's coming for Volkanovski's head, forget the belt. And they're just two of the best featherweights on planet Earth. So I think this is I'm glad this is the main event, because let's not forget, this is the first time Alexander Volkanovski has ever headlined a UFC fight ever. And he's been on several pay-per-views. Then I think this is Brian Ortega's, I want to say, third headliner. So Brian Ortega has more main event experience than the champion. So love everything about this fight, and I can't wait. I know everyone's excited for the Diaz-Lawler fight. I am too. I've been tweeting about that fight for about 8 years now. I'm glad it's finally happening. Wish it was at welterweight, but this main event rules. And I really hope people don't just tune out after the Diaz-Lawler fight, because you're going to miss something special.
Casey, you have not been a big fan of Volkanovski trying to hype this fight up, have you?
No, because I just don't. I like MMA because, I mean, not to steal UFC's catchphrase, it's as real as it gets. I like pro wrestling, but what Volkanovski is doing is trying to sell pay-per-views, and I get it. It puts more money in his pocket, but that's not what I'm here for. I like Volkanovski. He's a gentleman. You know, he doesn't need that trash talk. I mean, they did how many episodes of Tough, and it was just like, ugh, and they did the fake trash talk. Like, I can't touch his car. I don't know. It was just weird. And I just don't need that part of Volkanovski. I like Volkanovski. He's a great fighter. He's the champ. And that's enough for me. And Brian Ortega deserves that, not rematch, but deserves that second shot at the title. And to me, that is enough. And the bad blood just seems so forced, and I'm just not into it. And just, it feels out of character. I don't know. I get it sells, it's more money in his pocket, but yeah. I don't know. Is anyone into it? I don't know. Am I missing something?
I love it. I love everything about it. Because Volkanovski, even off camera at Media Day, was like, I'm going to murder this guy. Like, he hates Brian Ortega. I don't think anything's fake about it. I think they'll shake hands after, because I think Volkanovski's talent, like,
what is he mad at? I don't understand it, because he's fake. I don't know what he's like.
No, I think he thinks, and I do, I don't know, I'm not calling Brian Ortega this at all, because I don't have firsthand experience with him, but I completely resonate with someone who thinks someone is getting preferential treatment. And as I have no, if I am Alexander Volkanovski, the champion, and someone gets preferential treatment and I consider them spoiled and gets to do whatever he wants with no repercussions, that would bother me. And if Volkanovski wants to say that, all power to him, because, again, he's the champ. He shouldn't he shouldn't have to be on anyone's time. If I'm not saying like the whole he's light thing, I don't really care about that. But Brian Ortega, I mean, Alexander Volkanovski even off camera said, I don't like people who think that they can do whatever they want and there is no repercussions for their actions and F everyone else. I don't like that myself. I don't know about you guys. You guys might like that. I don't particularly care if you guys do like that. But me, Jose Youngs, I understand why Alexander Volkanovski might not like Brian Ortega.
I got some bad news for Volkanovski. He is in the UFC.
I like both men as fighters and people. I'm just saying I completely understand where Alexander Volkanovski is coming from if that is truly how he feels.
But did I miss a story? When did Ortega get some preferential treatment?
He said it's all been. He said they didn't put any of it on camera.
Yeah.
So is this just the UFC? It seems not Brian Ortega.
I think it's a little bit of both because they don't show it. Like UFC, remember when we had Lauren Murphy? Do you remember when we had Lauren Murphy on the A side and she was saying a lot of the stuff that Eddie did that they didn't put on camera bothered her, and so everyone thinks she would be overreacting to her annoyance with Eddie Alvarez, but then she would even say, if you knew the full story and saw everything that happened, you would understand what I'm saying. And I get the same sense with Alexander Volkanovski.
Volkanovski said it in some interviews, like apparently multiple times they halted filming waiting for Ortega because he just showed up whenever the hell he wanted and stuff like that. And that's kind of what first got under his skin.
Yeah. Because I do think Volkanovski is a very professional fighter, and maybe he's just wired differently, man. It's like Nick Diaz is wired differently. Doesn't mean he's wrong. Alexander Volkanovski feels a certain way. I'm not going to tell him he's wrong in his feelings about being annoyed by another human being.
Yeah, to me, his issues are at the UFC, but carry on, Volk. Yeah. If he needs that chip on his shoulder.
I don't think he needs anything. I don't think his issues with the UFC. I just think he generally doesn't like Brian Ortega as a human being.
Yeah, and I think there's some gamesmanship to this, too. I think he's trying to get Ortega riled up and fight outside. You kind of saw it at the weigh-ins, after the weigh-ins. Like, Ortega gave his little speech saying he's going to take his head, and Volkanovski was all fired up. He's like, he's going to come out guns blazing. I hope he comes out guns blazing.
Let's not forget what Volkanovski went hard in the paint in on Brian Ortega yesterday. He had no idea Brian Ortega tests positive for steroids. When I say steroids, I mean steroids, not diuretics, banned substances, nothing. Like, anabolic steroids. He had no idea. And I know that was years ago, and Brian Ortega doesn't do that anymore. And he's even admitted, like, I messed up this and that. He completely owned up to it. But when Volkanovski brought that up, I was on Twitter. A ton of fighters were like, huh, I didn't know that either. And like, I think Volkanovski found out like 3 years before fight, and it just got under. I think it was just another thing that he didn't like. So I generally don't think it's a UFC thing or trying to hype himself. I just don't think he likes the guy, and he gets to punch him in the face. So he's excited to do that.
Jed, we were talking about this on the weigh-in show a little bit, and you like to dabble in the ponies from time to time. But at this moment, Alexander Volkanovski is a -180 favorite. Comeback on Brian Ortega is +155. So the conversation we were having is, there's some folks who feel that Volkanovski should be a much bigger favorite than -180. And I've heard others say that this should be lined closer. Me, right now, I feel like it's lined pretty well for a number of reasons. But what do you think of the matchup and where the betting lines currently sit? Is -180 for Volkanovski about right? But something tells me from past BTL episodes, you might feel the line is not where it needs to be.
Yeah, so if it were legal to gamble where I live, and if I were so inclined, I would be betting a substantial amount of money on that line on Volkanovski because that is soft. I would also, in this hypothetical world, be putting a pretty good sum on Volkanovski by decision because, as I've said many times on our various programs, Brian Ortega sucks at fighting, and Alexander Volkanovski might actually just be the best fighter in the world. Like, we talked about it yesterday on BTL, so I won't go deep into it. But very quickly, I think Ortega is the most interesting test for Volkanovski because I don't think anyone over five rounds can beat him. Like, whether you think the Max fight, however that played out, by the end of it, Volkanovski had adjusted to the changes Max made between fight one and two and was taking over that fight. And I think that that's just how he is. His mind for fighting is so good. His ability to make in-fight adjustments is very sharp. like he's the house, and you can't bet against the house a bunch and come out ahead. The way you can beat Volkanovski is with one big piece of offense, and that's what Ortega's game is. He loses the fight but wins the war because he can snatch up a neck or get a finish. So in that regard, I think he possibly presents the best chance to unseat Volkanovski, but I don't think it's at all likely. Like I watched more tape since yesterday because I didn't have anything else to do today. And one of the things that really stuck out to me is Ortega, you got to give him credit for all his wins. I know I don't give him a lot of credit because, again, he sucks at fighting. But you have to give him credit for the resume that he was built. But at the same time, like all of the fights that he was losing until the one big piece of offense, none of the great finishes of Ortega's career have come against like super strong defensive fighters. Like he's managed to snatch up a Geith. Like Cub Swanson is a good fighter, but you would never be like defense is the strength of Cub Swanson's game. And it's sort of like that. The best defensive fighter is Korean Zombie's not a great defensive fighter either. The best defensive fighter ever faced was Max Holloway, and he got the size nines put to him, man. Like I think Volkanovski is a much better defensive fighter than Max Holloway. Even he is. I just don't see a realistic avenue outside of getting a guillotine because Volkanovski really slips up. Otherwise, I think he's better everywhere, and he's probably just going to dominate this fight. Ortega's tough as hell. I don't think Volkanovski can get the finish just because he's not a huge finisher, but. Again, in a hypothetical world where I could gamble on this, I sure would be putting a pretty good sum on both Volkanovski straight at those odds and Volkanovski by decision.
Hypothetical worlds are always fun worlds to live in. And what was kind of at stake in my mind, at least until earlier today, Max Holloway would be kind of waiting in the wings for the winner of this fight, especially if Ortega won. But we found out that Max Holloway has agreed to fight Yair Rodriguez officially on November 13th in the main event, which is stunning to me because when this fight was first thrown out there by Dana White, it was nowhere near being done. Holloway wasn't cleared to fight. There was all sorts of stuff going on. And if I was Holloway, I was like, why would I fight anybody right now with this title fight looming in the background when you're sitting there waiting for the winner? But here we are. You're just going to fight Yair November 13th and get probably the winner if he wins.
He's going to get paid to beat the hell out of Yair and then get his title shot.
Yes, but before Holloway or Yair can get into this picture officially, this fight for the featherweight title has to happen first. So let's get right into the picks. Jed seems to be high on Volkanovski by decision. I gave my pick on the weigh-in show. I think Volkanovski will win a competitive decision, competitive to a point, but not so competitive that when it's over, I think we're all going to be on Twitter saying Volkanovski definitely won that fight. But I just think he has so many weapons. All are very effective. And if, like Jed said, if he could avoid something completely out of left field, which is not out of the realm of possibility, he should win this fight. So that's my pick. Jose, your thoughts. Who walks out of Vegas the featherweight champ?
I'm going to pick Volkanovski by, like you said, close decision. But I don't think we're going to be hammering down the door to declare Volkanovski the unanimous best featherweight in the world. I just think he's going to hold his place as champion. And I only pick Volkanovski just because going 10 rounds against Max Holloway, and I know a lot of people disagree on whatever, but he did win both. And this new Brian Ortega, we don't have enough tape. I'm going to use tape on this new Brian. So for all we know, Brian's the best featherweight in the world. I'd have nothing to base my opinion judgment off of. So I'm just going to go with the man that has been – what do you call it? Steadily fantastic, and that is Volkanovski.
I hope Ortega is not the best featherweight in the world, or I'm going to catch a rash of shit.
I don't care who's the best featherweight in the world. I just want a good fight.
Well, I'll tell you what. There's one panelist in our rankings who has Volkanovski fourth, number four in our rankings. I don't remember who that person was, but I don't know. But Casey, if just. Unless your mind changed from earlier this morning, you are on the and new train, are you not?
I'm going and new. On my rogue panelist rankings, I am going with the number three ranked Brian Ortega to defeat the number four ranked Alexander Volkanovski by fourth round guillotine. He will take a whooping in the first round. He's going to adjust. Third round, he's gonna do a little better. Volkanovski gets a little desperate, sticks that neck out.
Everybody says I'm the troll of MMA fighting, and it's really this man. It is. This
no, because trolls don't believe what they say. Casey truly believes that.
unless Brian Ortega has very fragile hands and he breaks his hand again in the first round, like he did with Max Holloway, unless he breaks his hand again, unless there's some weird injury, but I think the Brian Ortega we have now, new camp, looks like he had a great weight cut. He'll win this in the, what did I say, fourth round. Fourth round.
He looks in the best shape I've ever seen.
He looked great, yeah.
This looks like the best Brian Ortega I have ever seen.
Yeah. So that's my prediction. But
there we go.
Man, but I said this on the weigh-in show. Volkanovski is freaking awesome. He's freaking awesome. Brian Ortega is freaking awesome. Just a little bit more freaking awesome. That's all.
So that is the main event.
if this was a three-round fight, I would pick Volkanovski. But five-round fight, I'm going Ortega.
The longer the fight goes, the better that is for Volkanovski. I'm cool with you picking Ortega. Like, I think that that's bold, but fine. I think it's categorically insane that you have Volkanovski ranked number four. Just nuts.
I don't think I have Holloway, McKee, Ortega, Volkanovski.
Yeah, how is he not 1B with Holloway? Like, that's just insane to me.
I don't. Yeah.
Tune in to the new ranking show that'll be coming out very soon. The first Wednesday in October, I believe. So stay tuned for that. Maybe this rogue panelist will come on and be able to explain himself. But
hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Before we get to the main event, we have the women's flyweight title on the line, and Lauren Murphy will look to do what many feel is the absolute impossible, and that is to throw in the queen of the 125-pound division, Valentina Shevchenko. Right now, Shevchenko, a minus 1,600 favorite. The comeback on Lauren Murphy is plus 900. So, Jose, we will kick things off with you, because the majority of people believe that this is not an if, it's a when, and that Shevchenko will just roll here against Murphy, who absolutely deserves to be in the spot right now with five straight wins. Shevchenko, as always, approaching this fight like a gangster, normal stuff, and Murphy is taking any pressure that she could feel, and she's throwing it at her opponent. The quintessential, I've got everything to gain and nothing to lose mentality. If Shevchenko faces any adversity, it's wow, she was made to look somewhat human by Lauren Murphy of all people. So I'm curious, what do you make of Lauren's demeanor, the way she's approaching this fight, and just the matchup itself?
I mean, Lauren Murphy is saying everything right and acting right, and is clearly doesn't seem overwhelmed by the moment whatsoever. If anyone has watched any previous interviews that she's done with us about her past life or seen countdowns or anything, She's been through a lot of hell in her life, so I don't think fist fighting Valentina Shevchenko is even remotely close to the worst thing she's ever faced in her in however old she is, however long she's been on in this earth. So you said that Valentina's approaching this like a gangster. I think Lauren Murphy's doing the same, approaching it the same way. Like, I loved her line where everyone's putting this pressure on me to face the best female fighter in the world, but what if Valentina Shevchenko beats me but doesn't just put me away? Then we're going to be talking about, is Valentina really as good as everyone thought? I'm like, I love that. Love that you have to tell yourself that. I still don't think you're going to win, but I love that approach. I do think Lauren Murphy will win at least one round. I think Valentina wins a decision. I don't think she finishes Lauren Murphy. She is incredibly durable. And as Jen and I have said on many Between the Links, making your opponent look bad is a skill, and Lauren Murphy does that very well, where she just takes her opponents completely out of their game and squeaks out these decision wins. The ability to do that, I think, is a skill where you could fight a kickboxer and then just completely take her out of her element and make it kind of a sloppy pitter-patter fight, and then you win. So I don't think she's going to do that to Valentina at all, but I do think she will be able to take Valentina down at least once, maybe in the early rounds, like, because we all gave Jennifer Maia 0% chance to like make it out of the second round. And I think a lot of people had her winning the first round. I think it's going to be a fight like that. I think Lauren's going to win at least one of the first two rounds. And then Valentina just adjusts and then just blows her away en route to a dominant decision win. But I do think Lauren puts on at least a good showing and looks at least semi-competitive earlier in the fight.
Jed, do you think Lauren Murphy will win a round tomorrow night?
No, not even close. We talk like I do not want to disrespect Lauren Murphy. She deserves a title fight. Like, she, this is well earned. She is a legitimate challenger. This should go down as a great win on Shevchenko's resume, because that's what champions do. It doesn't matter how big a favorite you are. You fight the best people in your division time after time, and you stack up bodies. Like, it's what Demetrius Johnson did. It's what Anderson Silva did. It's what George St. Pierre did. And that's what Valentina Shevchenko is doing right now. Mike, you know, man, I am conducting the bullet train. I am driving the Chevy truck. She is the best fighter in the world in comparison to her peers. The gap between her and everybody else is so much larger than in any other division in the sport. And so because of that, it doesn't matter that Lauren Murphy is a top five fighter in her weight class, is a legitimate deserving challenger. I put her chances to win this at 0.01%. Her only way to actually win this fight, as far as I'm concerned, is if Shevchenko like snaps her leg at some point in a fluke incident. Because otherwise, she is better everywhere. And I think Lauren Murphy's super tough. She's never been finished. Like Jose said, she really does have that skill to make fights look bad. Like that, and that is, that's a legitimate skill. Rory McDonald almost won a UFC title based on that ability alone. And it just doesn't matter, though. Like, I think Shevchenko is going to run through her. I don't think she's going to win a round. I think that this is going to be stopped probably in the third round, maybe earlier, because at any point in time, like, if Shevchenko wants to just do the counter kickboxing thing, Lauren Murphy can make it to a decision, because Shevchenko is a very good kickboxer, but she's not the most dangerous on the feet. You know, she does have the big head kick knockout over – who did she head kick? This guy, yeah. She has that, but like otherwise she is content to win rounds on the feet. But she's also figured out in her last fight, nobody thought she was just going to – I'm just going to tackle Jessica Andrade to the ground and beat the hell out of her from top position. And I think Jessica Andrade is a more physical opponent than Lauren Murphy is. And I think at any point in time, Shevchenko can just do that and get a stoppage. And I don't see how Lauren Murphy doesn't get top crucifixed if Shevchenko just decides she wants to do it. So all due respect to Lauren Murphy, but she's in for a world of hurt. And anytime you hear somebody say, well, all the pressure's not on me because I have nothing to lose, it's the same thing as somebody saying, like, I have a great chin because I've been hit a lot. Like, it's a good thing to say, but the perspective really is underlying a greater truth there, which is – not good for you as the party who's really grasping at that straw.
It's like when the commentators are saying how tough the fighter is.
Yeah,
if they're talking about how tough you are, that means you're losing this fight pretty bad.
Exactly. I got nothing to lose. That means that's not great. It's not a good thing.
I did think
that was your thoughts of the fight, Kyle.
Yeah, I actually –
I thought that was a kind of a red flag too at the presser when Murphy said that, you know, if I, you know, even punch her, that looks bad on her. It's like, yeah, but you still lose the fight. That's the goal. The goal isn't to make Shevchenko look human. The goal is to beat her. So that kind of worried that Murphy even kind of threw that out there. But I think she was trying to trash talk and just didn't work very well. Murphy's tough. Can she do for three rounds what Jennifer Maia did that one round, you know, when she kind of just held her down, held Shevchenko down for one round? And I kind of think Shevchenko kind of gave that round away. Can Murphy do that for three rounds? Because I don't see any way she lands any significant strikes on Shevchenko. And I don't see her really taking Shevchenko down, you know, easily. I mean, she may get her down once. So I'm kind of Jose. I'm like in between what Jose and Jed said. It's going to be pretty one-sided. Murphy will have her moments, but I just kind of think it's going to be an ugly fight. I think it's going to be maybe a little bit better than the Carmouche fight around there. I love Valentina and her awesomeness, the fights themselves just don't blow me away as far as like entertainment wise. But skill wise, yeah, Shevchenko should show up and look dang good.
She's the new Anderson Silva. Like, she's going to have some duds because of the way she fights. And if opponents don't want to try and give her anything that she wants to work off of, she'll have some duds and just win convincingly. But if they want to put their head out there, she'll kick it off or top crucifix you. Like, I'd also just like to say, because it hasn't been brought up, Kaitlyn Chookagian had never been finished until she fought Valentina Shevchenko. Neither had Jessica Eye. Like, Lauren Murphy's really tough, but there's a world of difference in who you're fighting, and that toughness does not go that far against the best fighter in the world.
Jed, just why do you think Maia got that one round when she held Shevchenko down? Was that just a giveaway round by Shevchenko? I mean, what's to keep Murphy from doing that for 15 minutes after 10 minutes? I'm just wondering.
I agree with you. I sort of think that it was – I think that my take on it was that Shevchenko wasn't really anticipating how physical Maia could be. And Maia proved to be like, you know, not a direct match for her, but like she did not get bullied in the clinches. And so once Maia got that kind of one hole, that I think Shevchenko just kind of took the round off, because it's not like Maia threatened with anything whatsoever.
Exactly,
she was just moving on. And after that, it never happened again. I would venture to say in part because it seemed like Maia spent a lot of energy just trying to hold on. And so that was my take, is that I think Shevchenko underestimated how physical Maia could be. And then in the moment was just like, all right, well, this is not going to happen again. So you're tired now.
All right. That's co-main event. Let us go to the other 5-round fight. The return of Nick Diaz, getting ready to face Robbie Lawler, a rematch 17 years in the making from UFC 47. It was kind of surreal watching that package, watching the fight back almost when Nick Diaz knocked out Robbie Lawler at UFC 47. Kind of crazy to go back and reminisce about that fight and then see those two guys face off once again all these years later. So, Jed, you have said many times, until Tuesday when you wake up and you read that this fight actually happened, that's when you'll actually believe it actually happened. But have your thoughts changed at all? Like, it's Friday, we weighed in, we had the ceremonials, they seem ready to go. Has your stance changed at all? Do you feel any better about this fight happening tomorrow night?
No, I've been very firm. That's the way you don't get Wolf tickets sold to you, is you don't buy into this. Mike, I have been a Georgia football fan for most of my life. And if there's one thing being a Georgia football fan teaches you, it's that you're going to get sucked in and you're going to think this is the year we win the national title. And then you're going to realize, actually, no, they're going to break your heart in the worst way. And nobody on this panel can tell me it wouldn't be the most Nick Diaz thing ever for him to just show up tomorrow and be like, nah, dude, I'm out, and not make the world, just not even go to the arena. Be like, I don't want to do this. Never mind. There would be – nobody could be super shocked if that happened, and it would very much be a, that's Nick Diaz being Nick Diaz. So, again, until Tuesday, when I've had three sleeps and can confirm that this wasn't a fever dream or hallucination, I'm not buying it, and neither should you. You should just be pleasantly surprised if it happens, because then you won't be disappointed. And that's a much better way to go through life, everybody. Just limit your expectations and you will never be disappointed.
Well, there you go. So, Jose, we're going to think positively here. This fight does happen. Both guys make the walk. Buffer introduces them. The referee says, let's go.
Because it will happen.
Yes, I feel like it's going to happen at this point as well. I'm not buying into this whole expect the unexpected thing that that Jed's throwing out there. But we had Cody Stamann on BTL. He is not interested in this fight whatsoever. In fact, he said he's going to spend the entirety of the fight in the bathroom, just avoiding it altogether. He just thinks it's going to be an ugly fight. It's going to be – he thinks – I believe the word sad. He's just going to be sad by the output of these guys. It's not going to be a fun fight. Do you agree at all with that kind of sentiment, or do you think these two guys are just going to get after it and surprise a lot of folks and just have a classic tomorrow night?
No, I don't think it's going to be classic. I think it's going to be one-way traffic. I think it's going to be Robbie Lawler just throwing baseball bats for 10 minutes until either he gets tired and then stops, or he puts Nick Diaz away. Of all the media members, I think everyone here is picking Robbie Lawler on site, except for New York Rick, who is, for whatever reason, saying Nick Diaz is a fighter and he's going to win. And I said, live your truth, my guy. But everyone else is picking Robbie Lawler. So I just think, like, Robbie Lawler has fought a bunch of fighters in their prime. And someone was saying, like, Robbie would have lost to anyone in those octagons. Like, he would have lost he could have fought anyone on that night. He fought RDA and he would have lost. He would have lost to anyone if it was anyone else but Colby Covington. I disagree with that completely. He just fought a murderer's row, and then he fought the guy who has the second most wins in the history of the UFC welterweight division. He took that fight on like semi-short notice against a stylistic matchup in Neil Magny that just is tailor-made to just neutralizing Robbie Lawler. And he put Ben Askren's skull through a canvas and then woke him up with another punch. If Herb Dean stopped that fight against Ben Askren, I don't think anyone would have complained, and the entire landscape of mixed martial arts as we know it would be completely different, because then we don't get the flying knee from Masvidal, we don't get the BMF title, we don't get any of that. And it's because Herb Dean allowed Robbie Lawler to wake up Ben Askren with a fist. So I'm picking Robbie Lawler.
Bro.
He looks very, very angry. I don't care what Robbie Lawler says at the press conference or the media days, saying he's just focused on the fight, this and that. He looks really, really angry when he's not on camera. I know people say that's Robbie Lawler, that's just his face. No, this is different. I don't believe there's no part of me that believes that Robbie Lawler said whatever to fighting at 185 like 5 days before, because he looked pissed when he was talking to his coach, like off camera and coming in and everything. Didn't look happy whatsoever. Didn't look happy at the press conference. I don't think he was normal Robbie Lawler. I just hate doing media. I just think he was mad in general. So at this whole situation that's happening, I think Robbie Lawler is still a terrifying human being, and I think he beats most people outside of the top 15 at 170 pounds. I just think I don't want to call him washed by any means, because he still hits really hard. I just think they give him really tough matchups against guys with the crazy cardio, crazy durability, and can just neutralize his winging punches. So I'm picking Robbie Lawler. One-way traffic.
Jed, let me ask you this. After interviewing Robbie Lawler a couple weeks ago, I got the feeling that win or lose, this is it. This will be his last fight, especially now that Carlos Condit has retired. There's really not much left for him that would really interest him at this point, because he's not going to stick around and fight up-and-coming 170-pounders. He's just not going to do that. Like, it just makes no sense for him. If it doesn't excite him, if it doesn't get him up, he's not going to fight. He's just going to hang out with his family and train on his own. Like, he doesn't care. So outside of this fight, I just don't know if anything else would get him out of bed and get him in the gym to, like, train extra hard after this fight. Do you kind of believe that win or lose or draw, this is it? This could be the last time we see Robbie Lawler fight in the UFC, or maybe anywhere at this point.
Yeah, probably. I hadn't really thought about it until you said it, but it makes a lot of sense, which is a shame, because I always wanted Robbie Lawler versus Anderson Silva. That fight always seemed awesome to me. and there's no chance of that happening unless Robbie wants to go be a pro boxer. That'd be kind of cool. Pro very in very loose terms there, but that'd be pretty cool. But yeah, I think you're right. Like, I don't know what else would get him excited to fight, and his legacy is as secure as it gets in this sport. He doesn't need it. I don't think he needs it from a financial standpoint. I'm not his accountant, but I think he's doing okay. And honestly, it'd be, if this is his last fight, this is a really good way to end his career. There are not a lot of good retirements in MMA. It is a sport that is awful to its aging veterans, and he would de facto have one of the best MMA retirements ever if he beats Nick Diaz tomorrow and then just rides off into the sunset, and that'd be great. So I hope so. Honestly, I hope that this is his last fight. I had not thought about that at all, but with Condit gone, that's the only thing that I would have really wanted to see again. And it's better for all people and everybody's brain cells that that fight is not run back. That was just a one-off.
I would agree with that 100%. So,
you guys want to know a fun fact?
Jose's, I would love to.
So, you know, it's been a long time since Nick Diaz has won a fight. In fact, Nick Diaz's most recent win is closer in time to his first fight with Robbie Lawler than this one. It's been 10 years since Nick Diaz won a fight. Robbie, his last win was against BJ Penn in whatever it was, 2011, and he fought Robbie Lawler in 2004. So Nick Diaz has an entire career and then has been sitting out for 10 years of functional MMA relevance. It's awesome.
That's a wonderful stat. Jose, go ahead.
I think win or lose, I want to see him fight Stephen Thompson because I've been asking for that fight for a long time too. I don't care if it's a weird matchup. I just, in my head, wanted that fight 4 years ago, and I still want that fight now.
I think the fight makes a lot of sense. I just don't know if Lawler would be like, yeah, let's go fight Wonderboy.
Also,
you know,
like, Robbie Lawler is not a guy I'm going to try to, like, figure out. You just can't. He also strikes me as a guy like Chris Jericho. Like, Chris Jericho said a million times, when I retire, I'm just going to decide for myself and tell no one. I think Robbie would do the same thing. Like, in 3 years, he's like, oh, yeah, I retired 3 years ago. And be like, what? Like, that's – I feel like that's Robbie Lawler's style. He's just going to not go to the gym one day and decide he's done with it.
That's what Carlos did.
Yeah.
Carlos actually retired a couple months ago. We just didn't know it.
I think Robbie's going to do the same thing. So I – also, if he looks fantastic against Nick Diaz, then we can it's going to be different. But if he loses, I'm not going to tell anyone, I'm not going to try to figure out Robbie Lawler or tell anyone to retire.
I'd watch Robbie
that would be fine.
I know what you're saying. I have no idea. I have apps because Robbie Lawler is the one person on the UFC roster that you can ask him the most interesting question in the world. He'll be like, I'm just ready to fight. You know, he does that face where he's like, just ready to fight. So tell me about the new Secretary of State. You know, I really let my management deal with all that stuff. It's just really not my thing. I'm just worried about the fight. All right.
That's really funny. Well said. Anybody picking Nick to win tomorrow? I'm going with Robbie, too. I have no idea how, because I have no idea how this fight's going to go. But I'll go with Robbie to win, but no clue.
I am currently on Robbie, but I was originally on Nick, and I might talk myself back into Nick tomorrow if I actually see him make the walk. This is one of the only the only reason I was interested in this fight in the first place is the fact that Robbie Lawler is awesome and Nick Diaz is pretty cool. I think it's a really good matchup for Nick if Nick is still good. If he's not going to be the same Nick, but if he's 50% of who he was, I think Jose said it. Robbie had problems because he was fighting a bunch of tough dudes who had relentless cardio, and that's Nick Diaz, man. He'll keep playing forward and getting brained, and so stylistically, I think it really is a good matchup for Diaz. It's just have no idea what Diaz is at this point, so it's hard to pick him. But if I'm feeling froggy, I might go with him because it wouldn't shock me at all if Nick Diaz just walked through all of Robbie's offense and kept hitting him to the body. And then Robbie got tired because the Diaz brothers have somehow cornered the market on non-title 5-round fights, which is awesome.
Oh, the Diaz rule.
Yeah. It's just the Diazes get to do it. Nobody else does. And so it shouldn't surprise anybody if if Nick Diaz does fight and he stops Robbie Lawler in the fourth round because he's just hit the body a bunch and Robbie gets really, really tired.
There's a lot of any prediction. I think we have a lot of assumptions. We're assuming Nick actually trained MMA for this. It wasn't just, you know, swimming and doing his triathlon stuff. Nick looks great, in great shape.
He didn't look great in person.
He looks good on TV then, or what? I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know what it's. He looks really soft in person. When on the official weigh-in, he did not look great. I think. But again, that could just be because he's 185 and he's, you know. Not sucked out.
They've never looked like physical specimens either. Yeah, either the Diaz brothers, even when they're at their, you know, proper weight class. The 85 thing does work. That was like the biggest worry about me when coming into this fight week. It's like, ooh, does that mean he just didn't train? Does that mean he just didn't dedicate himself to? Because those pounds are just, you don't even have to cut weight. Even to get to like 175, I think, for someone like Nick, the pounds just kind of fall off just by training. And then, you know, you have a weight cut. So the 170, normally I'm like, oh, screw weight cuts. But I think for Nick's case, it's a bit different because 170 isn't like a dangerous weight cut or anything like that. But, man, I don't know. I think this face, I have no idea who's going to, I just don't know what Nick's going to show up. I know Nick will show up. He will show up. He will walk into that cage. But after that bell rings, hey, Nick's never back. Hey, I'll give Dana White credit for this. The Diaz boys, when they do show up for fight week, they show up, you know, in the cage. You know, maybe beforehand, they might not show the press conferences and things like that, but they will be there. I have no clue. I have no freaking clue. I do think this definitely favors Nick being five rounds, but he's going to take a couple of big shots to get to those championship rounds. Who knows? I really have no idea. I can't even give an educated guess.
Zero clue.
Oh, I got it.
Outside of Valentina Shevchenko, just throwing this little number out there, the two biggest favorites on this card outside of Shevchenko are Matthew Semelsberger, -550 against the debuting Martin Sano, who, let's be honest, we know why he's in the UFC now. Then the other, Tyler Santos, -450 favored over Roxanne Modafferi, who the comeback on her is +340. So shall we go to the peeps? Do we have any questions?
Yeah, we got questions. Hold on a second. Yeah, let's go to the peeps. Yeah.
We'll take a few from the peeps. If Robbie Lawler beats Diaz, we'll have to wait 15 years. Will we have to wait 15 years to see the trilogy?
Nope.
You think if this fight, is there a chance this fight might have a trilogy if it's a good fight?
I think there's 0%.
All right. Even if it's a great fight.
I think 0%. Did you watch that interview with Brett Okamoto and Nick Diaz?
I did, but then the very next day, Nick Diaz shows up at the press conference and he's like the opposite person. He's just like, I'm happy to be here.
No, I'm not talking about like his demeanor. I'm talking about specifically, he's like, why am I fighting Robbie Lawler right now? Why am I doing this? Who made this fight? They're idiots. So I don't think
I just went through like 6 hours of Nick Diaz footage. Within 3 or 4 minutes, he'll say both sides. So I understand what you're saying, but yeah.
I think there's a 0% chance. I don't think he fights at 170. Would take it.
After the weight cut shenanigans, I don't think Lawler would take a rematch.
Yeah.
I'm so interested. I'm interested in why did Lawler take this fight? Because he's been asked millions of times over the years. Straight up money? What was his reasoning? Did he say, I know he didn't say straight up money, but did he kind of just allude, like, they gave me lots of money for this?
Because Lauder's been fighting it?
Yeah, Lauder's been kind of avoiding this question for like years, asking about this.
Yeah. Well, because after, like, he even said, like, after two, three, four, 5 years, he never thought it was possible. He never thought it would happen. Yeah. So he just stopped thinking about it. Even though people were asking him about it, he was just like, it's never going to happen. I'm not going to worry about it anymore. And then they actually offered it to him, and he was like, all right, sure. Why not? I'm sure they're paying him pretty handsomely.
Robbie also strikes me as a guy who he will think – like, I have a feeling he did think about this fight a lot more than he let on, but he's never going to tell the media that. It's like someone asked him, it's like, oh, are you ever disappointed that you didn't fight George? And like any other fighter would be like, yeah, like he would have been a great match. Like I would have loved to fight the greatest welterweight of all time. Robbie's like, you know, it just didn't happen. I don't put my mind into something that didn't happen. And I was like, yeah, that's the most Robbie Lawler answer ever. So, but in the back of his head, I'm sure he would have loved to say more. He's just not the guy that's going to tell the media that.
See, I take him at face value. I think Robbie Lawler does not live in a world of hypotheticals. Like he's just like, nope.
I get what you're saying, but like, I just feel like he's wanted to rematch Nick Diaz a lot more than he's let on. But again, like what you said, if it's not going to happen, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So maybe he moved on. Maybe outside of his own head, he moved on. But internally, I'm sure he wanted that fight.
Yeah, it's about evolving and getting better. That's what it's all about. That's what he says.
Yeah, here we go. I think we got this question on one of a different podcasts, but let's go ahead and answer it again for this one.
Why isn't Lauren Murphy getting credit as a title challenger from media and fans? Are people starting to get bored with Valentina as champion? People are pissed she didn't beat Amanda the second time. I mean, listen, what can he do? What can he do? Like, I think Lauren is going to be very competitive in this fight. I don't think she's going to win. I think she's going to take a beating. But I think that's what's going to raise her stock, is that she's going to be super tough and she's going to have her moments. Even when, like, the fourth and fifth round, when things aren't looking good, she's going to hang in there and she's going to fire back and she's going to prove toughness. She might even, like, talk a little smack to Valentina in the middle of the fight. Doesn't mean she's going to win, but I think we see things like that. I think it's going to be a more exciting fight than people think. But it just is what it is. Valentina, like Jed said, Valentina is just so much better than everybody in that division. Like, it's just that. I don't think it's disrespecting Murphy as much as it is respecting Shevchenko.
Yeah, agreed.
And also, I go by this kind of the same road that Murphy got to the title. If you gave Valentina those same opponents, she wins more impressively. You know, that the 4 or 5 wins that Murphy had to get to get to this title shot. And Murphy earned her title shot, but a couple of those wins were they could have easily gone the other way. So I think that's why, if Mr. Bose is wondering why maybe Murphy isn't getting that kind of push that, you know, usually contenders get, like Ortega's getting, you know, that's kind of why. Just Murphy's road hasn't been as clear cut, at least in her wins.
It doesn't help that, like, obviously, like, there are fights, like, perfect example, when Brian Ortega knocked out Frankie Edgar, Dana White at the press conference is like, yep, Brian Ortega, number one contender. When Francis knocked out over him, he's like, yep, Francis, getting the next title shot. When Lauren Murphy beat JoJo, every person in that media room was like, yeah, she's going to fight Valentina next. And Dana was like, you know, we'll see. We'll have to get together on Monday and figure out what's next for Valentina. Like,
yeah.
Not even Dana White is telling her as a contender.
I don't think Dana's ever really sold Murphy.
And I think Valentina and Lauren Murphy cut very underrated promos in different ways. Like, Valentina is like just oozes confidence, and her like one-liners are just fantastic. And Lauren goes on these like long diatribes of just like whatever she wants to talk about. And I do think it's very interesting when she gets on these roles. So two very different promos, but two promos that I think people pay attention to. Like her promo she cut on Fight Island about how she's better ranked, she should be ranked higher than 4. I'm like, at least you're getting people talking about you.
Yeah, she was pissed that Jennifer Maia, she's still pissed Jennifer Maia got a title shot.
Oh, she's infuriated.
Why? Whatever.
I think there's a way more simple way to answer this. I don't think anything that was said was wrong, but like, what's Lauren Murphy's highlight package? If you're putting this together for this fight, what's the highlight package you're putting to promo her here? There isn't one. She doesn't have it. It's not, and it's really tough to get credit or have people be interested in you if there's not like one touch point to be like, oh, she did that dope thing. It's like, okay, she's good. She's a durable fighter. It's tough stuff.
I would say a little goes to the same for Volkanovski, why he doesn't get that credit as a champion. He doesn't have that, you know, that big knock. Yeah.
Like 100%, I think that's true. Like, you don't have a great highlight package for him. You have at least him fighting people that people know, but you don't have like, oh, he dropped dude or whatever. It's not there. And that's really tough to get people up on.
I think it sucks that he's not had that big crowning moment in his home country too. Every champion needs that.
That is
like true. Him beating Jose Aldo.
Did he get booed at the weigh-ins? Volkanovski?
Yeah, but not a lot.
Not a lot. Ortega definitely got the bigger pop, right?
Yeah, but I think it was like because like Brian's team was like, or like his group of people were like kind of in the front. I don't think it was like a lot of fans. But
okay, well, I was watching the UFC broadcast at least, and my impression was Ortega got the much bigger pop.
It wasn't
pop.
That big. Okay. It wasn't that big.
You were there. This guy cares. Here we go. A couple more questions.
And I don't think they were anti Volkanovski. I just think they were very pro Brian.
I hate to even throw this out, but if Nick Diaz goes out there and wrecks Robbie Lawler, and
if it's the same result as the first fight,
it's Kamaru Usman, baby. That's what's happening.
You know it. And Leon Edwards is going to be,
Leon is fighting Jorge next, regardless of what happens.
Good. Leon, be more interesting, and then you get to get a good title fight. It's your own fault. Nick Diaz is going to get a title fight. It'd be awesome.
I bet Leon fights Jorge in January.
Jose, can you hold your mic up? Sorry.
I think Leon fights Jorge in January.
All right. Pay-per-view co-main event pay-per-view?
Co-main event of Izzy Whitaker.
Co-main event of Usman Diaz, you mean? No.
That's what I heard.
I do not mean that. What at all. I think Usman fights in July, now that John Jones can't.
You know, if Nick wins, title shot or bust. I mean, he won't fight anybody else unless for the belt. Like, it's just crazy. And that's just what it is. That's what's going to happen.
And Usman will be calling for it aggressively.
Yeah, I think he fights. I think if Diaz just smokes Robbie and Usman beats Colby, they fight in July.
We haven't talked about it too much, but I mean, it's another story. But I'm assuming Izzy's going to have the same big-time travel issues that Hooker has right now. So who knows what's going to happen with all that.
I think it's going to be January.
All right. These are silly questions.
Yair versus Ortega next year for the title. What do you think 0%. Are the chances? Yeah.
Wow. 25. 25.
This is mixed martial arts. Anything can happen.
I'll go 14%.
I think if, and this is
1%.
I think Holloway wins. And I think a better question next year, does Yair Rodriguez fight next year? Is a better question. And that's like, I love watching Yair Rodriguez fight. He hasn't been the most active fighter. Which is, I'm not knocking him. It's just
Holloway. It was Holloway that put it. Sometimes it's him. Sometimes it's opponent. Obviously, it's just a string of bad luck.
I know, but Yair, you know, we had the three strikes for not sharing his location with USADA, and then he like disappeared for a bit. So, and then he got hurt, and then cut, and then not cut, and
Holloway got injured.
I don't know what Yair's gonna do next week, let alone next year.
I just hope Holloway. I just want to see that fight. I want to see Holloway back in the cage, and I hope he's.
That question would be freaking Giga versus Max. That'd be a banger of a title fight.
Here we go. Oops, one more question from
Uno Mas. Thoughts on Dan saying CKB may move to the States. They may wind up in Cali. Yeah, I mean that's probably the move, right?
Like, I don't think they would do California.
Why not?
I think they'll move to the States, though.
I think they do Florida.
I don't think it happens. Dan Hooker kind of these guys were going a little overboard when he was talking about that.
And, at the media day at the scrum today?
Yeah. He was like, Izzy's just kind of talking from, you know, Izzy's passionate, as we kind of said.
I don't think they'll all move together, but I do think I think it'll be a temporary move until this passes. I don't think
like the top guys, not the gym, because the gym's got like.
Well, I think the ones like that can afford to be. I think the guys that can afford to be full time fighters will move to the States temporarily, because obviously, like when you're a lower ranked fighter, a lot of them have jobs that they can't just like leave to go move across the world. I think like the top level guys will move to Florida.
So really, it's only like maybe three or four guys, because, and maybe.
They have kickboxers too and stuff. Like it would be like Eugene, Izzy. I don't Volkanovski splits time. Hooker, Shane Young, Riddell, and then Blood Diamond, Carlos Olberg.
Carr.
Yeah, all those guys. Yeah.
Okay.
I think they'd be like 10 to 15.
It'd be interesting. All right. I think we're good, gentlemen.
Yeah. I mean, it all goes down tomorrow.
Nobody cares about the rest of this card, Philistines.
Oh. Let's talk. Oh.
All right. Pick one.
Oh,
I just meant the fans. We're talking about people.
Yeah, you're right. This card, we were talking about how awesome this freaking card is, how many top 10 fighters on this card, how many fights actually have serious significance, yet nobody's talked about Andrade Carvalho. No one's talking about Curtis Blades. Nobody's talking about Marlon Moraes, Marab.
We didn't talk about that fight.
The Curtis Blades card, Junior Fight, I keep forgetting is on this card, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah,
I love that.
There's a lot of good
ones. I love all those fights. I think Andrade, Cynthia is going to be one-way traffic for Andrade.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for big sure. opportunity for Calvillo because if she wins, she's going to fight for the title next.
Yeah, she's not
no win. Probably, yeah.
It'll be a very tough victory for Cynthia.
Yeah, she's if not, we get Alexa Grasso. Maybe Tyler Santos earns her way.
Isn't Alexa Grasso fighting someone?
Yeah, she's who is she fighting? I gotta look this up real quick. I should know this. Is she fighting Joanne Calderwood?
Grasso?
Oh, yeah. That's a good fight.
Yeah, it is. Like so if she I wins, like if Grasso wins that one.
UFC, I maintain that the thing to do with women's flyweight is have Shevchenko do a Queen of the Hill and just take all the top 10 fighters and one after the other into the cage against her and see how deep she can get into the rankings. I think she could make it through 8 before.
No, are you on the whole? Shevchenko could beat Jake Paul in 0 seconds.
zero seems low, but Shevchenko is awesome. I know
she's awesome. Yeah, I was just like, okay, all right. Hit the music,
Casey. Hit the music. And listen, folks, if you're like, Mark
Price the walking papers this week?
What's that?
Is it pink slip baby from Mama Rice?
I would hate that. Losing just to top 5 fighters, that would be just horrible. But
I think that fight's going to be a really close fight. I really do. I think Marlon's going to bring the thunder. I think Marab wins, but I think Marlon's going to be much more competitive than people think he's going
to
be.
I think after a round and a half, it's Marab's fight to lose.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. But I think the first 8 minutes will be a lot of fun.
It's going to be hell, though, to get to that 7.5 minute mark. Hey, you have a little gremlin behind you, Mr. Heck.
I know. Kid driving. Him and the dog. The single dad life ends tomorrow night. Thank God. Thank God the wife comes back home from Massachusetts. And I get a little bit of sanity in my life. Yes, Grayson, we see you in your puppets and... That's it. We got the music playing. We got to get out of here. We'll see you tomorrow, 5:30 Eastern, I believe, for the People's Pre-Fight Show. So bring your questions, bring your thoughts, and we'll address them for 30 or so minutes. And then Jose is going to bring you all sorts of scrums, and we'll bring you all sorts of goodies. So until then, for Casey, for Jose, for Jed, for my kittens, puppets, I am Mike Heck. Bye. See you tomorrow.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.